You're listening to Meeting Pod, the podcast powered by Meeting Place, the premier magazine and news source for the meat and poultry processing industry, and Alt Meat Magazine, the only business information resource for the exploding alternative meat industry.
Hi, I'm Lisa Keefe, Editor-in-Chief of Meeting Place and Alt Meat. Welcome to this month's Meeting Pod episode dedicated to the meat alternatives market. Perendi Burdi has spent most of her career in biotechnology, specifically the science and business of the cultivated meat supply chain. Because she grew up and went to college in Kansas, however, she envisions a practical path toward a more non-meat-based diet for Americans. Perendi is in the startup phase of a company aimed at the largely untapped market in blended proteins. The idea is that by combining conventional meat products and non-animal sources of proteins, change-resistant consumers can be more easily convinced to incorporate alternative proteins into their meals. The key to blended success, she says, is as much in the marketing as it is in the science.
Well, good morning, Perendi, and welcome to the Meeting Pod podcast. I appreciate your taking the time to talk with us about your new venture.
Absolutely, Lisa. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, terrific. Well, you know, we want to talk about blends because it's always been a little bit of a mystery to me why blended products, either plant-based and meat or, you know, in any sort of form, haven't really taken off in a bigger way than they already have. And so I'm very interested in your perspective on that because your background in the alternative space is pretty varied and deep into both sides. So tell us first, you're months into the process of launching your company, mm-hmm. which will innovate and make products that will blend ideally animal proteins and plant proteins. Have you decided what you're going to name the company yet?
Not yet. But let me know if you have any ideas.
I will. And now your background is in molecular science and you've worked a lot in cultivated meat companies. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your work, your personal experiences. Mm-hmm. How have they led you to this blended product idea?
Yeah, so I have been involved in the alternative protein sector, broadly speaking, for about a decade now. In 2013, I learned about this crazy idea. It was called in vitro meat back then. It's known as cultivated meat today. And while much of the world wrote it off as just some crazy idea, there were a dozen or so people who were seriously dedicated to making it a reality. And pretty much overnight, I became one of those people. I got a degree in biochemistry to advance the field and joined as an early member of Good Meat, and a few years later, Mission Barns. I helped build both of these cultivated companies from the ground up, from really developing the vision, setting the strategic path, hiring the team. And in both startups, I began on the technical side, but with my background in biochemistry, contributed most on the cell line and media development areas. But being an entrepreneur at heart, I always gravitated towards the non-technical functions. So I led efforts across various departments from business development, marketing, HR, you name it. I essentially created a department, ran it on my own for some time, and then hired a team of experts to take it and run with it. And then about 9 months ago, I took a step back and asked, am I working on the most impactful thing? Is there critical white space that should be explored? And this evolved into a bit of a soul-searching exercise, you could say, and a long Google Doc with all sorts of ideas for new companies and projects. And I spent much of the year really working through various projects. So I was working with this team, Food Systems Innovations. If you don't know them, they're great. You should check them out. But I was working on kind of various industry-wide initiatives. So to give you an example, I was working on a project to help create infrastructure for cultivated companies to be more collaborative and strategically share IP, establishing an industry-wide MarCom's organization. And the biggest project I was working on was exploring the potential of blended meat. I became interested in it just thinking that it seemed to be the silver bullet to solve some of the biggest problems in alt protein, but it just seemed to be really wildly underexplored, as you were mentioning. And so I led this research deep dive, and essentially every week that went by, just increasingly felt convinced that blends hold massive potential. And so I recently started my own company in the space, and interested in joining or learning more, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Well, that's a very interesting journey that you're traveling on that. Mm-hmm. As I have watched various variations on blended meat efforts, it seems to me that the target consumer kind of moves around a little bit. I feel like over the years, as I've read about blended products, that the intended target has moved a little bit. They're older, they're younger, they're whatever. Mm-hmm. Tell me now, in your research, what do you see as the best target consumer for a blended protein product now?
Yes, I'll answer this in two ways. So first, with a story. So I have this friend in Houston who, like many of us, is trying to eat healthier but struggles. And a while back, he had a short break for lunch between meetings. He quickly ran out to a Burger King near the office. And being a flexitarian, he decided to try the Impossible Whopper. He hadn't had it yet. And the next week, he was hanging out with some friends and found himself in that exact same drive-thru line. And he was trying to decide if he should get the Impossible Whopper again or if he should just get the regular one like he usually does. And he was torn. But in the moment, his friends kind of looked back at him and said, like, hey, man, what do you want? And he just decided to get the regular Whopper. And me being so fascinated by how people make food decisions, I was so eager to ask him, like, what was your thought process? Why did you choose to do it? And he really, like, simply just said, I don't know, the vegan one was pretty good, but it just wasn't as good as the real thing. And I eat plant-based meat every once in a while, but I'm not, like, totally vegan or anything. I think this story happens every single day. My friend is kind of the quintessential flexitarian where he opts for plant-based meat maybe a few times a month, but struggles to make it a daily part of his diet. And I've spent, you know, so many years and countless hours analyzing the psychological and physiological and social and cultural dimensions of the food experience and read countless papers, attended conferences, all of that. But I honestly think it's pretty simple. Like, we regularly, repeatedly purchase products that we love, products that we crave and that we're familiar with and fit into our identity, our cultural identity. And like really getting that really simple concept is what drew me to blends, because I feel like that's what they have the power to do. But to answer your question more specifically, I was just asked this at the conference. And so I'll kind of share how I answered it there, where I asked everybody in the audience to raise their hands if they, generally speaking, want to eat a little healthier. And as you can imagine, pretty much everyone raised their hands. Mm-hmm. And then I like went in to talk about this. There's this segment of the population that like really cares about eating healthier. They've consistently said they want to eat more plant forward, but consumer research shows us that about 90% of them say that they want to eat more plant forward protein in particular, but they're frustrated by current products that are really designed and tailored and marketed more towards vegans. And it's not just lip service. When you look at market research, it really confirms this, where if you look at kind of how alternative proteins have performed over the last few years, there's two key takeaways that I think can really help answer the question. So the first is that a lot of people tried plant-based meat over the last few years and searched for a healthier plant-forward protein. Some estimates show that around 140 million Americans have tried plant-based meat. And I'm sure a lot of them did it for, you know, curiosity, but I don't think that big number happens just on accident. I think there's something like deep and real inside of people that's drawn to it. And the other piece of data is that the people who do buy plant-based meat, they buy it incredibly sporadically, often just once or twice a month, and then they eat meat for pretty much every other meal. And so we have this like big frustration gap where there are people who are saying they want to eat more, but there's not really any good options for them. And so when asking what it would take to convert those purchases from monthly to daily, I think four things need to be true. They've got to taste as good as the real thing, genuinely feel healthier, they have to compete on taste and connect on that like deeper emotional level and not clash with someone's cultural identity. Most people want to eat healthier, but they just don't want to give up meat. So when asking consumers, would you prefer to have plant-based meat occasionally or regularly, daily, have a product that combines animal and plant protein? An overwhelming majority prefer the latter. So I think if we can make products that really deliver on that, a good percent of the population is all in. So that's kind of a long way of answering it, but those are how I'm thinking about it today.
No, I'm completely tracking with you because I also have tried the Impossible Whopper and thought, huh, this isn't bad. But having had the option since then, I did not make that choice. So Perendi, with all of the combination that a conventional meat and a plant-based, all these good things that happen when you bring them together, why isn't this category bigger than it is already?
Yeah, this is really the heart of my research. And I took a three-pronged approach to really answering this question when I was kicking off my research project. So the first was in-depth market analysis. The second was product development, where I was working with chefs and product developers to develop kind of initial prototypes and do blind taste tests. And the third was a consumer insight angle, which included focus groups and surveys and meta ads testing with over 200,000 consumers in the real world. And what we did there was we made several ads essentially for these like fake companies and saw who was actually clicking on shop now and trying to buy these blended products and what proposition territories resonated and who really are the early adopters. And what I learned through this process is that there's this huge untapped market of people who want to eat better, but there aren't many products that are really designed for them. And when looking at the blended players who have kind of come and gone, I think that they're falling short on the marketing and kind of proposition, the marketing and positioning as we've been talking about. But another way to think about the question is that it's not as if there was a big blended category that was built and then failed. There just really hasn't been much activity here and really just a handful of attempts to date.
My question then, with all of that background, moving forward, are you envisioning that maybe the best product concepts going forward that will work with blended proteins, are they the burger, the starting point, as I have found and your friend in Houston found, or are there more options to be explored through sort of international or ethnic cuisines where meat in general is more likely to be an ingredient rather than this Western idea of center of the plate type of protein?
Yeah, it's such an interesting question. I think that these products, no matter what format they take, they really need to connect on a deeper emotional level and fit into people's identity, like I've been talking about. I think the whole point of blends is that we're not asking consumers to jump from zero to 100. So meeting them where they're at is important. Some companies are blending with like spinach and kale and other vegetables that are super healthy, but don't feel as intuitive. And one of the beautiful things about blends is that we can use plants to really enhance the sensory experience and even explore products, as you mentioned, that are kind of culturally specific. So imagine like Southern products, like a Texas smoked brisket with red cabbage and sage, or a bourbon bacon, artichoke pork link, or an Italian truffle meatball. I think we can make these products that really excite people. And I think the blended companies that succeed will make products that feel really indulgent, delicious, intuitive, natural. I think people from all cultures can kind of get behind that. So I think the format is a little bit less important if you kind of hit those other parts of the equation.
Well, I think that that's going to prove out to be true over time. And I hope that a lot of folks who maybe tried the plant-based early on and were disappointed will hear this kind of information and will be moved to try it again, either in a blended or in a plant-based product, because there certainly has been a lot of changes in the taste and texture part of this market. So having said that, what do you think would be a successful marketing message around this blended category? I mean, there have been successes and some failures, and there doesn't seem to be a pattern to me about what seems to hit the right note and what doesn't. So what do you think will resonate at this point and into the future?
Yeah, I love this question. It's my favorite topic. I've touched on it a little bit throughout the interview, but I can always say more here. I think that we need to remember with meat, we're not motivated by cognition, but more so by our kind of deep unconscious desire for satisfaction. So using delicious, taste-first, indulgent imagery as an example is a really key, effective way to do that. I also think the concepts of familiarity and place play a pivotal role in food psychology. For our survival, evolution has wired us to seek familiarity and really understand our food. And these primal instincts still influence our food behavior today. I think for consumers to embrace a new food source, it's helpful to be able to envision its origins. And our evolutionary wiring makes it easy for us to envision how a cow, for example, becomes a burger. But it's more challenging to envision how peas can transform into a burger. Okay, this confusion creates room for doubt and allows the narrative of kind of unnatural processed fake meat to gain traction. And I think that blends can really sidestep that entire discussion by focusing on meat that's enhanced with plants. I think this approach allows blends to confidently occupy the realm of real in the consumer's mind without questioning its authenticity. And when my company's thinking about it is we're kind of throwing out the black and white way of thinking, all the rules and labels to craft this perfect piece of meat where we're combining the meat we know and love and crave with these plant-powered benefits we want more of to create inspired, enhanced protein with more flavor and more juiciness and more nutrients. I think the companies that succeed here will have a kind of consumer-obsessed, taste-first approach and connect on that deeper emotional gut level.
I think that really puts the finger right on what some of the reception issues have been in terms of, particularly in terms of texture and such. So one of the other things that has been discussed as a barrier for consumers is the ingredient levels. So yeah. How do or do blended products lend themselves to a shorter, more easily understood ingredient label just by way of making it easier to enter the market and get attention?
Yes, it really depends on your approach. So my company is combining meat with whole plants. So we really will avoid the whole ultra processed discussion. One unique challenge for blends compared to plant-based is that it's a new concept and category. So I've noticed that when I talk to a lot of people about blends, they have incorrect assumptions about what it can be. So for example, their minds might go to like fillers or those super healthy blends that I was talking about with like spinach and kale. So there's definitely some unique challenges of blends over other alt protein industries, but it really depends on your approach. You can totally avoid the ultra processed discussion by blending with like whole plants like I'm planning to do. But there's other companies that are, you know, taking a different approach, more of a plant-based meat forward approach. So yeah, it really depends on your approach.
We're going to take a break from our conversation now for a brief message from our sponsor, CalSec.
Today's podcast is brought to you by CalSec. Multiple factors affect the shelf life of plant-based meat and poultry. High moisture, a near-neutral pH, and processing conditions all promote microbial spoilage. DuraShield Natural Food Protection Blends from CalSec were designed to take these challenges head-on. DuraShield Blends combine antimicrobials with proven CalSec antioxidants like Herbalox for a patented synergistic combination that inhibits spoilage and discoloration, extending the shelf life while keeping the label clean. To protect your plant-based proteins and your bottom line, visit calsec.com/altmeatpodcast. Now back to today's podcast.
But are there challenges that blended products have to sort of overcome that aren't part of other alt-meat sectors? Or do you feel like this really sidesteps the problems and doesn't really introduce a lot of new ones?
Yeah, I think the new problems that will come about is one, you know, as I mentioned a little bit, I think people come into it with a lot of assumptions. I think potential, even like talent and investors, they have kind of the wrong idea of what blends can be. And so that's something I think that as we're kind of building this new industry and showing how blends can be different than they were in the past, I think that that will kind of assuage some of those concerns. But today, that's something that I think is really present. I think that companies that try to really clearly explain that blends are a combination of animal and plant protein may cause confusion, which is something that, you know, fully plant-based products don't have an issue with. So for example, on a restaurant menus, you don't have as much real estate to explain your product. And so you can kind of quickly simply say plant-based burger. But if you're trying to explain that you have a burger that's a combination of animal and plant protein quickly and concisely and in a kind of tasty way on a menu, that's a challenge that the industry can have. I think that's one of the reasons why I'm excited about marketing the products as more enhanced meat products rather than literally talking about the fact that they're blends.
I think that's an excellent point. We're talking about the taste and the texture, and really the first point of contact that most consumers have is going to be on that package, on that label, or on that menu for the fast food. I find it interesting that just looking strictly at beef and mushroom as a combination, for example, that over the years, various types of blended beef and mushroom burgers have been on the market and have done, you know, okay, but not, you know, knock the barn doors open. But at the same time, I've spoken with dining managers at universities and institutions who have put the mushroom and beef blended burger as a menu item. And it's just like not even giving an option of a beef burger, but here's your blended burger, and that the recipients, the students or the patients just really love it. Very interesting how to sort of get that idea across to people that it's a product that they actually already know and love and have tried elsewhere, and that they can make a choice to choose it as well. Do you envision blended products as a bridge to maybe a mainstream embrace of a more plant-forward diet overall? there's a lot of discussion around, you know, there's plant-based meat analogs, and then there's just sort of plant-forward overall, which mm-hmm. is generally understood to be healthier than the usual American diet. Is a blended conventional and plant-based meat product a really good bridge for people who might be reluctant?
When I look at where I want to be in, let's say, 50 to 100 years from now, a world in which we truly have a sustainable protein industry, it's hard for me to envision a realistic path without blends playing a critical role. I'm not really excited about the short-term benefits of blends, but I believe that their true power lies in their unique ability to create an environment where the entire alt protein sector can thrive. I think there are several ways in which blends can kind of strategically get us to that point, and I'll just quickly mention a few of them. The first is that blends are uniquely positioned to be able to build partnerships between alt protein or blended companies and conventional meat companies. I think they have a unique ability to really align incentives and align bottom lines, which is an important point of kind of building this sustainable food system. I think we need to have a much more collaborative mentality. The second is that blends can help build alliances between major NGOs like climate and nutrition NGOs, influencers, governments, other powerful figures in our society, given their non-divisive nature. I think mm-hmm. these kind of allies will rally behind blends more than they would for a fully vegan product. And the third is that I think blends can unlock investors who kind of see this huge untapped market. Oh my gosh, I think many investors mm-hmm. can, that I've spoken to, recognize a big potential payoff in staking an early claim and are interested in kind of getting in on the ground floor. So I think if you kind of look at all of these pieces in the puzzle, I see it as an important kind of critical part of the story of getting to that end goal of building a truly sustainable food system.
I think that's a really interesting long-term approach and a good answer to what I thought was more of a short-term question. In the course of your career, you know, you've worked with startups and big companies, you've worked in cultivated and microbiology. Now you're immersed in hybrid, getting into the plant-based sector. From your point of view, do you see a time in the future when the meat and the alt meat industries just come together as a protein industry, where a company might do both conventional meat and also have a unit that does plant-based meat and maybe one that does blended? Or do you really see them as serving different types of markets with different types of technologies?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely see us coming together as one big protein industry. I think we're at a time now where we're moving beyond the black and white way of thinking, where we can really innovate without bounds to create the perfect meat product, as I mentioned. We make meat the way that we do now, I think, because that's the way we always have. But if there's a way to make better, safer, healthier, more efficient and sustainable meat, when I've talked to people at these large meat companies, I feel like the sharpest people there really understand it and are all in. I think they understand that it just makes sense to feed our growing global population. You know, sometimes investors will ask, what's keeping big meat companies from copying you? And honestly, I think that's not the smartest question to ask, because if our goal is to really build a big blended meat category, having a big player enter the space is actually a great way to do that. I think there's kind of two scenarios that I see. The first is that, let's say 10 years from now, blends occupy around 10% of the market. The second scenario is in which large companies enter the space and we can push that to maybe 20 or 30%. Mm-hmm. And assuming a big meat player enters the industry, I see two scenarios there. So one is that a blended startup can get acquired. And then there's examples like Crave Jerky that was acquired for $220 million, or Applegate Farms, which was acquired by Hormel for $775 million. Or a second scenario in which these startups can successfully grow alongside the incumbents. And I think if a blended company can capture even just, let's say, 5% of that big market, they'd still be considered a wildly successful startup. So ultimately, yes, I foresee the meat and alt meat industries coming together as kind of one big protein industry. And I think it'll be sooner than people think.
I quite agree with you. And it'll be an interesting time in the next several years in the meat protein industry to watch this sort of unfold.
Absolutely.
Parendi, thank you very much for your time today and for giving us an opportunity to talk about this part of the market that I think I agree with you. It has a tremendous amount of potential and just hasn't gotten the attention that it deserves so far.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Lisa. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Parendi Burdi may have found an overlooked niche in the alt meat sector. We thank her for telling us about this new venture and the journey she took to get here. You can read more about blended proteins on our website at alt-meat.net. You can also go there to sign up for our daily newsletter and bi-monthly print magazine dedicated to the business of alternative meats.
Remember to tune in on Mondays to get the inside track on the people and the processes that drive the protein industry. Be sure to subscribe to Meeting Pod on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow Meeting Place and Alt Meat Magazines on social media, and be sure to visit our websites at meetingplace.com and altmeat.net.